Welcome to the Green Room. Today's guests are Edna Smith, who began her career as a sales representative in a classified advertising at a local Raleigh, North Carolina newspaper, where the director of the sales group labeled all the sales reps as professional writers. After all, they were being published every day in the newspaper. She went on to complement her English BA with a technical communication MS, which led to her work as a writer and editor going forward. Liat Rathbun, a technical communicator and technical communications advocate who helps share best practices through teaching, volunteering, and her work. She's an STC associate fellow who for the past 15 years has worked primarily as the sole technical editor in a large software documentation department. Kelly Schrenk has always been a bookworm, but it wasn't until she got her degree in English that she realized people would pay her to read all day. Since then, she's taken her ability to bring structure to chaos and to add value to clients in a variety of industries for many kinds of deliverables. Sherry Lee Henkin has worked in the tech comm community for 20 plus years, honing her skills through on-the-job boot camps. As an editor, she collaborates with her teams to produce error-free and user-friendly procedures, work instructions, and user guides. George Hayhoe started his professional career teaching literature and composition at Virginia Tech. He transitioned to industry, where he served as a technical writer and editor, and then taught technical writing and editing for 12 years at Mercer University before retiring in 2015. He is currently editor-in-chief of IEEE Transactions on Professional Communication and served as editor of STC's Technical Communication from 1996 to 2008. Today, they're all here to help us start answering the question, why do you need an editor on your team? Welcome.
Welcome, everybody. But really quick, I need to know, Edna, who was the gray kitty?
That was Kit Kat. She wandered in when she heard us all talking.
A cat? How cute.
She's going to stay.
She should. We're cool.
Right? Is she introverted?
Editors are.
Yes. No, actually, she's a diva.
An introverted diva.
So she can right choose. In. She can choose which one she wants to do.
So interesting. So all of you have come into this field. You're all editors, and you've come into this field from various angles and from various perspectives. So you grew into the position of editor, correct?
Yes.
Is that the common way that people become editors?
I feel like there's more training now. Yeah.
Yeah. There is more training now.
I can see people doing it right out of school now, whereas back when I started, there really wasn't as much to do that. Does everybody else think that's true?
Yeah, but I've noticed, I've noticed the younger editors don't know editing symbols, and then I become a snob and they're no longer good.
I was just going to say that not just for editors, but for technical communicators in general, it used to be more common that you just kind of find yourself in that position and might not even know the label until somebody comes and tells you like, hey, you know, you're a technical writer or, you know, consider becoming an editor because you're editing all day or something.
Right. Because isn't there there's a common trait, at least, you know, from my limited perspective, what I've seen of editors that makes them good editors. Have you seen this in your peers that are editors, and have you experienced this in yourself? And can you enumerate what those traits are?
I just have some thoughts on that. For myself, it seems like I need to look at the big picture, but be attention to detail. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of colleagues called me eagle eyes. I do miss things, but that's at the big picture. You got to, especially when it's a document that's, I just had a long procedure that somebody, that one of the teams wanted to work on. And we really had to look at the big picture of where are you going with this and what do you really want? Mm-hmm. And then get down to the detail, even to the minutia of, okay, what's going to be bullets and what's this, and you know, so that seems to be very helpful. And mm-hmm. also how to give feedback to the writer.
That's a tricky one. Go ahead, George.
Feedback is a very, very difficult process, and it's fraught with all kinds of perils if you're not careful. You really have to be a diplomat, particularly when you are editing somebody who thinks that they know it all. I had one experience editing a resume for a four-star admiral in the Navy, recently retired, who provided a 24-page resume, and the government's bid process allowed only 2 pages.
Right.
And going from 24 pages to 2 pages was a real diplomatic quest.
Well, George touches on another thing here too. It's so there are various levels of writing experts that we edit, that we work with as editors. And even if, I mean, you don't want to tell anyone that they're not good, but even the ones that are good, it's not necessarily if you're good or not, it's whatever the standard is for this particular project. Mm-hmm. And so our role is to, you know, match that and to help. I mean, we're with the writers on the same side, and our goal is to help them meet whatever the requirements are for the document.
Sometimes it means that they just need to be consistent with everybody else,
yeah,
what everybody else is doing. And sometimes they can't be as, you know, as they can't show their good writing as well.
Right. Because that's some situations. That's what I was just going to ask. Because one of those things is like, there's maybe one, sometimes in some situations, there's only one of you on a team of writers. There's a lot of other writers and you're the editor. Like, I think, Liette, you're in a situation where you're the sole writer in a large group.
Sole editor.
Right. Sole editor, yeah. Sorry. In a large group, right? So you're the ones that have that universal look at the style, because as a corporation, you want to have that universal front, that voice that's the same, right?
Right. And that's where, I mean, you know, that's where you talk about the rules. In my company, we talk about the rules as we establish them or move to change them. But bottom line in editing, in writing, is you have to agree to whatever the rules are, whether you like them or not. And
sometimes we don't even like them as editors. Sometimes the rules that get put into place, we're like, well, that's not really the style that I would have chosen, but you've still got to, you know, make everybody follow it.
Yeah. But with that, and this is kind of a bigger issue, but I will say, depending on how, I don't know how to say how much your company cares about or whatever, there's different levels of leeway in the documentation. And, you know, obviously we always have to make sure that it's accurate, and we can't deviate on that. But beyond that, there's different levels of, you know, how many editing rounds your company wants, how many, you know, what's an acceptable standard of deviation for, you know, number of errors, and how far away can they get from our standards?
Yeah. And, you know, we've been making the point for years that the technical communicator has to be involved with the project from the very beginning. That includes the editor. The editor needs to be involved at the very beginning of a project to do things like establish style guides,
look for problems,
manage the process, really.
Yeah.
I think it was a conversation I was having with Edna that we were talking about having involvement in a lot of, not just, but a lot of other business units within the organization. So you get a more of a global perspective of the company, right?
I don't think that was me, but
I like to work for small companies for that reason, because it's much easier to get yourself into what marketing's doing and what TechCom's doing, and kind of see what the whole company is saying about products and services.
Would you guys agree that a big aspect of editing is not just the editing, but training on what actually what we're doing today, training on why you need an editor and the benefits of
standards. Totally.
Well, and training the other people on the team to do peer editing as well. Because yeah, right. If you are a single editor in a very large group, right. You can't do the editing for all projects, right?
And I was just going to ask about that peer editing thing. Like, you know, you could have peer editing, but that still doesn't replace the role of an editor, right?
I don't think so. But I think it's getting to the point where it's a luxury to have someone like Liat that sits there and edits all day. A lot of companies do go to this peer review, peer edit, or they just get rid of editors altogether.
Is that a case of being, is that a case of being penny wise and pound foolish?
Yes.
Thank you.
Believe yes. Because I think people discredit editors because they don't understand what we're doing. And it's right. Easy to just think, oh, you're just reading or you're just making marks on paper. But it could be, I can't remember this story, but some guy went into an office, he interviewed for a job, and he read through this document and he caught this mistake that ended up saving the people thousands of dollars. Right. But nobody thinks about it in those concrete of terms. It's just like, oh, well, you just sit back in the corner and you read. But no, it does save money and time if you have the person in the room in the beginning, because they hear all of the initial conversations, they know what the message is supposed to be at the end. And it's easier when you get that document at the end to say, oh, I already know what this is supposed to say. So let me compare it to all of these meetings I've been in, all of this information that I've gathered. And then it's a better document as opposed to, oh, I'm at the end. Now I need to go back and learn all of these things. And
right.
More time and more effort. So
it's better to ask the questions as you go along instead of at the very end when you're questioning the whole document, like because you don't know what's behind it.
Right. And I think and I know this was a conversation with you, Edna. I know this part is as a writer, it's hard for you to edit your own work. Like sometimes, even as an editor, you'll have to go and write things, but you can't edit your own work.
That's the hard thing about being the only editor or the only writer slash editor. And I've been in that position, and I'm sure probably everybody here has, where you have to let your work breathe. And people will want their work 5 minutes ago, but you really need to step away from it to go back and edit it after you've written it or rewritten it from somebody else's attempt. Let's call it an attempt. there needs to be levels, and there needs to be a writer and an editor, and their roles are going to be enmeshed, but they should definitely be two separate roles.
Right.
Well, I think peer editing is better than no editing.
Yes.
Because you always need a second pair of eyes, but I do think the importance of an editor is, you know, we're a separate pair of eyes. We, the writer, even if it's not their product or, they're looking at somebody else's documentation, they've gotten used to the groove of the document, of the standards, the procedures. I mean, as far as like the working through the product itself, and they might also be blind to certain aspects of it. But
or sometimes you can see they tried it. The writer acting against an editor will try to make the other writer be like them. As opposed to having one editor who's making everybody the same.
Right.
Like in peer editing, like they can like, they're trying, they're each editing each other against their own work, which is a waste of time.
Peer dominance.
But the other aspect of it I wanted to share back to your original question, Janice, about kind of the divide with editors and writers. I think there is like a natural calling. And I think that in general, good editors are good writers. I don't think it's necessarily true that good writers make good editors. You know, they just don't always, you know, none of us are perfect. But we have different skills, right? Just like we're not going to do the edit, we're not going to do the engineer's job because they have a certain set of skills. The writers don't always have the skills required to be an editor. And I can tell you, I remember, like for me, like I can write well, but I remember like my problem is sitting in front of a blank piece of paper and starting a document. To me, that's really scary. I can do it and I can do it well, but I much prefer taking something that somebody's written and helping craft it into something even better, even more, you know, nuanced.
Yeah, I like to compare it to, you know, I like to watch those HGTV shows where they're before and after.
Yeah.
Like that's what I like to do in my work. Like there's the before you get, it needs some work, it needs some attention, it could use some finessing here and there. Maybe it needs to be completely reorganized, whatever it is. And then you could get to the after and, you know, you look at it without the markup and you're like, ah, look what I did. This is great. So that's why I like being an editor too.
There was a question in the chat that I thought maybe we could look at.
Go ahead and say the question.
You're going to read it out loud?
Show the question.
Because I want to capture it on the video.
Yeah, just what's the question?
Okay, it says, for technical editing, should editors be adept at other things more in line with technical writing skill sets such as project management or technical writing tasks, or is it too much to ask for an editor role? And I want to say, no, it's not too much to ask for an editor. Right. I wouldn't say project management, but whatever your passion is. I know that I really got into 508 and I really like it. So, and that's something that's becoming more and more in demand. So my advice for that person, which project management is always in demand too, but I would say find something that's kind of within the realm of where you want to work as an editor and then hone that skill because then you're more marketable in that area that you want to be in.
And then can you clarify what 508 is?
Sorry, 508 compliance. Making things accessible for people who have hearing disabilities, sight disabilities on the web mostly, but it's also in different documents and different reports. But it's if there's a picture, then there will be a description of whatever's in that picture available to the person. There will be ways to have content read to a person. It's just making everything accessible for everybody, whatever disability you might have. Every piece of information, and this is was a big government thing, but of course, a lot of industries are doing it too, but just making everything accessible to the general public, no matter who you are. So.
I would somewhat disagree with Edna about project management. I think if you're working on a large, either on a large documentation project as an editor, or if you are working as the editor in a sizable documentation organization within a company, I think project management is a really valuable skill set to have because in some cases you would be the project lead as editor in some of those situations.
Right. Well, I think, isn't it a matter of agility less than title?
Agility.
Like the ability to manage projects, the ability to do writing, the ability to do a variety of things.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
Yeah. Not so much just having the title of project management.
Oh, I'm not talking about being the project manager. I'm talking about the ability to make sure that everything gets done on time, on budget,
right?
To spec.
Well, yeah. And I think, is that the difference between like, okay, so somebody had said earlier that you can come in, now there's classes in university and and whatnot. And you can come into the field at a much greener level. But a lot of you, from what I know, have come into this from the slog, the long slog, right? Where you've proven yourself and you've done these different roles and you've elevated and you've fine-tuned and you found that natural ability inside yourself or that interest that you have in the details and the big picture, all of that along the way. So that makes you a lot more versatile, sure. Right?
Could be. You know, I want to support, I hear both sides of the project management question, but support mm-hmm. more. I'm an independent contractor as a technical writer and editor. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have to be the project manager for my client necessarily, but I have to manage my pieces of the project.
Right.
So as I work with a client, we're working on several procedures. Some have been assigned to me to edit. I need to track where those are, even though they've got their big project management, whatever tool they're using. Mm-hmm. I have to know, oh yes, it went to the stakeholder on this day. It went to this person on that day, because otherwise, where is the document? You know, as the editor, I need to know what status it's in. It's an important skill, and it can be learned, as Liz wrote about, said in my introduction, you know, on the job boot camp. I mean, that's where I got it. It was like, let me track this, and it works, you know.
Yeah, I think project management is pretty big. I'm not saying you shouldn't have the skill set to track the tasks that we do or the projects mm-hmm. that we work on, but project management is pretty huge.
Mm-hmm. It's like its own thing, yeah. Really.
Yeah, if you
got you get certifications in it, and you know, I mean, you can really go far with project management. And some people have started out as tech writers; they become project managers. I mean, that's something that you can do. I don't know that I would structure a technical editor position to also be a project manager. Like that seems kind of strange. But if you look to publications, other fields, a lot of times you'll see editors, and that's what they're doing. They're coordinating the whole project, you know, all the projects. So it's not totally unheard of.
It depends on the vertical. Sorry, Edna.
I was just saying, no, definitely not. And I know when I got my master's in technical communication, we did go through project management, but we also went through task management and, you know, scheduling our projects and our piece of the work. So I guess it's six of one and half a dozen of the other.
Mm-hmm. To add to that, and maybe as a resource for FIR and other people, Writing Assistance Inc., are they writingassistance.com? They have this spreadsheet that gives you an idea of like how long a project can take, which is like, I don't know how accurate that part is, but the part I wanted to say is it shows you the assumptions. So yes, you can expect an editor to provide things on the scheduled time, but there's also the resources part, and keeping in mind how raw the document is. For example, if you think you're submitting, you know, just for proofreading and you're gonna send this out, but the document is like very messy, then it's going to take more time, assuming you want to then stop and add that that review cycle. So there's some, my point is that there's also resources and expectations. So yes, there is project management, but you when you establish that and when you're evaluating that for the editor or with the editor, there's, you know, keep those other elements in mind. Like for our writers, we tell them, you know, you can't write if the subject matter expert is not available to you, for example. So the same sort of thing, like we need certain things in order to make our process work as well.
Or you get in a situation like I was a couple of days ago with a client department, and I was brought in as the writer/editor to help them really edit the procedure. And it turned out they don't have a documented workflow, so they don't even know where their information is coming from so that they can write the procedure. Like they weren't even, so talk about, that's a big contingency in a plan. You know, so we couldn't get to step one because they were before that.
You were step three.
Right. I don't even know.
Well, that's another aspect. You know, the writers sometimes are expected to write to a moving target, like the product isn't even created itself.
Right.
And what exactly are you asking the editor to do? I mean, I can tell you if you've got a typo, is that going to help you? You know? Right.
That sounds like a Dilbert cartoon.
Right, right. The cool thing was is that the group understood that they weren't ready. And they liked the, and so what I was able to bring to the room, so to say, was the outside perspective. Like, have you done this? Have you done a workflow? And they said, wow, that's helpful. See, even though I was brought in to quote unquote write it, you know, sometimes I think that's another role an editor can bring in, is we're not in the weeds of the writing necessarily. So we might be able to say, did you cover this? Do you need to cover that? And to Edna's point about expertise, I've done, but I've spent a lot of years in healthcare, and especially healthcare compliance.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an eye for, well, if you're saying that, what are you compliant with, you know, just in general. So that's, I think, another role of an editor is bringing in some things from the outside.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to what you were saying, Sherry, about, you know, the outside perspective and the workflow. I mean, sometimes your writers are actually SMEs and they're not that good at the actual writing, and you can actually coach them through the writing process, as I think it was probably some of what you were doing. She's like, well, this comes first and then this and then this, and then later on I'll come in, you know, like just trying to help them with the writing process.
Well, that's another trend, having the SMEs, the subject matter experts, be the writers, mm-hmm. and then where, you know, and then having us as editors come in, or maybe, you know, the company can decide that we don't need an editor, we're just going to rely on the subject matter experts. So there's all these variables, but hopefully, and especially if they're using the SMEs as writers,
definitely sell yourself when you have the SMEs as writers. It's much easier to sell an editor into the process
to let them know why you
than it is when it's just writers. Like, well, writers, they know how to write, so you don't really need an editor. When you can say they're SMEs and they don't know how to write, like sometimes you have an easier chance trying to promote yourself into it.
Yeah, I would say. So a big problem we have as editors, and in some degree writers have this problem. If the documentation is perfect, you know, if you don't stumble on anything as a reader, then you don't notice the writing. You don't notice that there was a writer behind it. So the writer is invisible. And then we're one step behind them. So we're like doubly invisible. So it's very hard for us to, you know, justify, you know, you need us because everything is perfect. You know, it's like, how do you explain what we, you know, what we took care of before you saw the mess, or, you know, the would-be mess?
Yeah. I mean, if we do our job well, everybody looks good and there's nothing to complain about. So like,
well, it's like Edna pointed out, that person who came in for that interview and found that error that ended up saving that company. So it's one of those risk aversion thing. So you need to, you know, that's what an editor is to help avoid risk, right?
Mm-hmm. And also to build confidence.
Yeah, you guys also brought up a really good point, because sometimes there's the accidental, just like some of you kind of became the accidental editor. It just, you elevated to that position or went into that position. I want to say elevated. You went into that position.
I'd say elevated. Yeah. I love that. Thank you.
At the top of the pyramid, would you say, Kelly?
look at.
I just need a little push today, please. Just give me a little something.
I have a deep admiration for editors. I could never be an editor. I could never be an editor. But there's a lot of people who kind of, I don't want to say trip into, but they do trip into the field of technical writing. And having an editor on the team means that you're also safeguarding, because they didn't necessarily go through all the training that a professional technical writer going through university now, where there's professional technical writing classes, they might not have even had English as a major at university, right? But they ended up in the field of writing. They tripped into it.
Yeah, that was, I think, a lot more common 20, 30 years ago than it is today. We're graduating quite a number of technical communicators out of the 50 or so undergraduate programs, maybe more than that now, in the US anyway. I stumbled into the profession myself. I was an English professor and had been trained in textual editing definitive editions of literary works, which has absolutely nothing to do with
technical
the kind of editing that I do now. Mm-hmm. But I started out editing SMEs and discovered that it was a whole lot easier, rather than asking them to write a draft, to play with the software myself and write it and then pass it by them. And so, you know, for years I was a technical writer. Mm-hmm. And then the company said, no, you've got to be an editor in this group. So that's basically how I got into technical editing again. I had very few students who wanted to specialize in technical editing, because it's a really tough game to get into. But not that there aren't plenty of opportunities to do that, but comparatively few students want to do that. They want to do the sexier stuff, you know, playing with multimedia. UX.
Going into UX, because that pays more.
UX
right now. Sure. Yeah. I feel like,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, I feel like STC is getting a flood of new, they call them new professionals now, people who they're in teaching or they're in something else that are coming into tech. So that's kind of interesting to see that. Some want to be editors, some just technical writers, but.
But you know, it's kind of the field of writing, because it's so diverse, it has a diverse entryway. There's not just one way into it, right? So I think that's one of the challenges. But to be an editor is different than coming into writing. Because being an editor, I mean, you have all of that, all of those disciplines behind you. Like you have that structure and organization behind you. I think it's a little different, don't you?
I think it is, because I always find it interesting that I have some very intelligent friends who can't write a complete sentence. Mm-hmm. Find that so funny. But for me, I was reading all the time when I was younger, and I was writing and journaling. So I was always paying attention to the rules. So I always wanted to know how to put something together properly.
Mm-hmm. And I lost well, I mean, it's, it's, yeah, I mean, so I used to love playing the, you know, spot the difference in the newspaper, like those, right? And I still, like, right. I love finding little details, right? Not to point it out because it's wrong, but just the excitement of like, oh, there it is, you know. So and some writers just want to get, you know, understand the concept and just want to get it out,
get the idea out.
Mm-hmm. Right, they just want to get the idea out. They don't want to spend time, I mean, they do need to follow some rules, but they want help in somebody going through and making sure that all those little, you know, spots that should be clean are clean. So, you know, it comes down, I think, ultimately to personality. Again, there's a, you know, I guess that's part of the talent for it part, but some people are just a better fit for the editor role and some people, you know, resent having to peer edit or whatever it is, right?
Let's talk about that. Those, have you ever run into a situation where you had to give hard feedback to a difficult person?
Yeah.
All nodding.
Especially if on the independent side, you know, so anything from, and George alluded to, you know, talked about resumes, anything from editing resumes to, you know, someone's document that they really are connected to. And I actually learned about how to give feedback. And so when I have to give feedback to a writer who's got expertise, who's a good writer, and they have subject matter expertise, or anybody I have to, I really try and be diplomatic, you know, point out what's good, indicate, use words like consider, or could you consider stating it this way? Would that mean the same? Because as an editor, I may not have the subject matter expertise. And if I suggest a difference, we may be changing what the whole sentence means. It may not be correct. Mm-hmm. So I find when I do it that way, you know, it's helpful because sometimes I just had this in another procedure I was doing. I said, I'm not seeing the step-by-step, whatever was supposed to be there. Are we missing something? Or is this okay? And I said it as a question. They said, yes, we can do it. We can leave placeholder language. Okay, it's their document, you know.
But, and I try to sell it to them as, I'm here to make you look good. I'm here to make the company look good. This isn't about you and I. This is about, you know, like, this is, we're getting paid to put out a good product. And I'm just here to help you do that. You know, and so, I ask a lot of questions too. Go ahead.
I don't ever tell anybody what to do. I make suggestions.
I ask a lot of questions.
Questions. I never say anything, but I have two questions. One, is anybody else having the whole serial comma drama that I
who has not been through the serial comma drama?
There's a really good article in the Greg Manual. It's called the Greg Manual of Style, I think. Greg, G-R-E-G-G, by McGraw-Hill, I think. There's an article called The Comma Trauma, and I love it. That really clarifies for anybody who's ever wondered, why should I use a comma? Why should I use the Oxford comma? You know, it really clarifies when to use a comma.
I'm going to have to look at that.
Yeah, me too. I haven't seen that, but that sounds great.
It sounds interesting. My other question was, we haven't heard anything from Liz. She's sitting there quiet.
She's been typing in the chat. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of editors. Yeah. I actually have worked with a couple of people on here, but I had an editor who, he would take what I wrote and know what I meant. Mm-hmm. Right? So it would turn it from mediocre writing by me into something that was spectacular, right? He knew what I was after. He knew what I meant, and it made all the difference.
While keeping your voice.
Yeah, well, and making it better. You know, the voice I think I have rather than the one I actually have.
Liz Plus.
Right? I wanted to.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to respond to Janice's question about hard feedback, and I actually wanted to use two examples. In my early on in my career at the company I'm at now, there was somebody who'd been there for a really long time, and nobody had bothered to tell him that he was not a good writer at all.
Aww.
Yeah, so it's very hard for me to, I mean, I provided feedback and met with him and did it in a gentle way and never said, you suck, you know.
Really, you want to, don't you? Sometimes you just want to say that, but.
And he had found himself in that position in the company. He had rolled into this at some point, and he'd been in it for years. And, you know, the for whatever reason, like standards changed or whatnot. So I was really proud of the way I handled that, because I made him excited about the journey of it. Separately, last year, for the first time in all my years, some people know about this already, I had a bully. We had a newer writer. I mean, he's been in industry for a while, but new to ours. And I considered him a bully. I met with him for a training session and talked about our standards. And he was, you know, questioning why it's our standard. And even when I was like, look, this is what the president wants. The president of the company wants this, you know? So, and because of COVID times, it happened to be, anyway, I happened to record this training and was able to share it with my supervisor and ultimately other people. And they backed me up in like, oh yeah, why did you even continue this conversation?
Oh my gosh.
But in it, even then, you know, I wasn't attacking him or even his writing, just trying to stay focused on, well, I submit to you that this is the way people in our, you know, this is how the other writers are doing this. And the other thing that we ended up doing is I was still able to deliver training to him through email and also just through global messages in our, when we have documentation team meetings. So just to share, and I don't know if other people have similar ideas.
Did it take?
Sorry?
Did it take?
He's improved. His writing has come in line with some of our stuff more, and he's more, I have not met with him since then. There's like this, we don't talk directly unless it's in a staff meeting, but I have been able to provide feedback, and he's a contributor now. I mean, he helps shape general standards for our new documentation environment, for example. So yeah, I guess in that respect, it took. And the other important thing is that I had the backing of my supervisor and our, you know, the boss is involved everywhere. So that, you know, that's definitely an important aspect in this role and in other roles.
Do you guys think like the peer review, and now they're teaching editing at university, do you think that helps prepare them to work with an editor out in the field?
It might help, you know, the tech writers that are going through the programs, because they do have to do that kind of stuff, don't they, George?
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, our students always said the course they liked the least was technical editing. The course that was the most valuable was technical editing. Yes. Because, you know, many of them wind up in situations where they are not working with a full-time editor. Right. And so they've got to, you know, do their best to edit themselves and to peer edit other people.
Right. So what role does AI have in editing? Is that encroached? Like, it seems like AI is like all over the place now. I saw an article where they said AI is going to replace the writer. I didn't read the whole article. I just walked away. I'm like,
I can't see that.
Deal with that right now. But does it play anything into the role of an editor?
Even with Grammarly, and I look at that and it, you know, how it's supposed to correct everything, and I have it because I refuse. But I just think that there needs to be a thinking brain behind the decisions.
I mean, I use Perfexit, which is better than Grammarly and helping with consistency and things. And I still have to double check it. It still is not catching everything. It helps, you know, and especially for me being, you know, an independent, you know, it helps me with things, but it's not foolproof.
And Kelly, I think you can maybe with that speak more to Janice's question, because I think maybe with things like Perfectit, which sits on top of Word MS Word, and you can essentially program it to catch certain errors, like if you're, you know, there versus, you know, T-H-E-I-R versus T-H-E-Y-R-E and that. But I think, so their big thing, Perfected says, they kind of help free the editor for more advanced or different kind of edits. So I think that that's the role. If anything, it changes so that you don't have to focus on the minutiae, on certain minutiae. You just need to approve, like that's the other part of it, right? It tells you, I found this error, and you have to approve it. And then
you have to decide whether it's good or not. Just like spell check and grammar check and Word. I mean, you've got to tell it no quite a bit.
And then do you find, because I haven't worked with it, I've just heard about it and actually presented it as a tool to some of my students. But do you find that it then frees your time more to deal with, like, is it copy editing or substantive editing, like different levels of editing than you otherwise would?
I just think it makes me faster, which being, you know, everybody wants that, right? So yeah, I mean, I think it helps me catch more. I think, you know, maybe I would have caught every little thing, but I think that it, sometimes I do it at the beginning and the end, and sometimes it catches stuff all, you know, both times. So I think it's really helpful.
So the general, I haven't worked with Perfected, but I have used Grammarly, and it is helpful. I wouldn't say that it replaces a technical editor, but it certainly makes the tasks, the tiny tasks of technical editing a little bit easier.
I have a word of caution from years ago, not Grammarly or not Perfected, but just spell checker. And actually my teacher in technical communication somewhere along the way told us this. One of her students wrote a whole essay on what should have been about warehouses. But it was all about whorehouses.
And there's also the Fornicator's Bible, if you want to go back in time a bit, where the, you know, thou shalt not commit adultery, the not was omitted. Little word.
Oops.
Little word, big word.
In healthcare of compliance, we get complaint and compliant. Constantly. And they'll come out fine. So the eyes, you know, we have to read that. And
yeah, we have clinical trials a lot too.
Right.
On the clinical trials.
Right. The trick with complaint and compliant is they're used in the same document.
Yes.
Because you have how people can complain to the organization. There is a compliance piece of that. I'm getting tongue-tied here, but
yeah. So your complaint is compliant.
Exactly. Your complaint process has to be compliant, but you know.
So bottom line, it sounds like we still need a human eye.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Thinking about even spell check, as simple as it is, most people know how to use it, right? But how many of you have gotten a Word document to edit and they've turned off the spell check on things, and there's all kinds of stuff spelled wrong because they've turned off the spell check?
Or they have it set to UK English and in the United States.
That kind of brings, Kelly's comment brings to mind for me, there are certain expectations we have of the writer. So even though we don't expect them to know the standards perfectly well, we do expect them to
spell check.
We do expect them to earnestly try to learn all the standards, you know, not memorize it. And, you know, and I joke with them, don't become perfect, because then what would I do? But we don't want them to, you know, we want them to try to get a perfect document. We don't want them to just throw it over the fence to us and give us all the fun of trying to make it all work.
Yeah. And at least spell, you know, you could at least do kind of a find replace for the product name. Or just not spell the product name wrong. I just found that the other day, like, and I'm going through a slide deck and it's two different ways over 40 pages. I'm like, okay, we could have, you did this more than once. You could have figured this out.
So AI will not replace an editor.
No. I don't think so.
Or the writer. And if AI does replace writers, that actually gives the editors more work.
We're all in trouble, right? I really think that takes human interaction to write for humans, right? Because it takes some human thought in a lot of consideration in writing for humans. And if you've ever had autocorrect on your phone, then you know that AI can't replace a human.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh.
Right? The proof is in the phone.
I told my brother once I was going to send flowers to his friend for helping with something. And I wanted to send exotic flowers, but it almost wrote it as.
Now that's a flower.
Somebody asked me how I was doing and I tried to say I'm good and it said I'm God. And I said, I am God. Yes. I totally agree with spell check.
Are you God? No, and that are you good? Sorry.
And if I could go back, I saw that a few people sadly said they had trouble with bullies. And so I just feel free to reach out to me. I don't necessarily say I'm the expert on dealing.
It's counseling. Yes.
but what I did want to say, so what helped here, first of all, like I did have, you know, support, but I was able to, so I had created a PowerPoint of different things I'd wanted to share with this person anyway. So I was able to directly, you know, share some of that, create an email that took some time, but a series of emails over that. That was one thing. And the other thing that helped, and I still do, is just find things that I want to say to this person, but as general reminders in staff meetings. So that might work, you know, for you people who are going through it. And my apologies to you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, bullying on the job is never acceptable. And if you do have a bully, then you get your manager involved. And if your manager is not getting involved, you get that manager's manager involved and you can go all the way to HR because bullying on a job is not acceptable. It's okay. You know, some people have rough personalities, but even that they need to work with because we all need to work as a team. So that's never an acceptable thing. So you need to escalate and get some interaction and get some communication going that's healthy, because that's not acceptable. The role of an editor is to make us all look better, right? Not to make us look bad. So,
well, yeah. And you're probably not the only person having a problem with the bully.
Probably not. Exactly. That's why I say, you know, you have to escalate and elevate. And oftentimes, by the time you get to HR, HR has heard from other people that this person is a problem. Yep. And they have to interject themselves into the situation and rectify the situation, or, you know, one way or the other, they have to solve that problem because it's not acceptable in a workplace. And if you're having a problem, like Kelly says, somebody else might be having a problem.
If you think about it like a team thing, like not an individual thing, like for the whole team. It's not just about you.
Yeah, it's not you, it's them. Clearly, I mean, anytime you're dealing with a bully, it's not you, it's not them. I mean, it's not you.
I think the hardest thing is probably to recognize it, you know, to realize that that's what someone's doing to you, as opposed to just thinking you're having a personal clash with someone.
Right.
So that's very smart of all of you that have recognized the bully when you see it. Because right. I'm sure I've had some bullies that I was too young and just assumed it was a personal.
Well, and that's what I said. That's what helped.
Back in the day, yeah.
In this instance, that I had a recording and that my supervisor was interested in listening to it. And then, your confidence shakes. I mean, I hear places in the recording where I not so much second guess myself, but I do sound more shaky than I would usually be about something, you know, and it was really good to have reinforcement. So yeah, if you think you're having a problem, share with your manager.
Cool.
Good advice from some great editing people.
Oh, that's us. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz.
No, that is you guys. Hello.
Thank you guys.
You all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's been such a pleasure. You guys have shared so much of your knowledge and wisdom. And just so everybody knows, there's a link that you can connect with all of these lovely editors. And I highly recommend you fill your tribe with these people. So again, I want to thank all of you for coming. It has been a pleasure talking with you. And hopefully everyone understands the importance of having an editor on the team, at least one editor, and not making their writers be the editor too, because I don't think you can do both.
Thank you.
You need to have the editor.
Right.
Go editors.
Thanks for that plug.
You know, it really is amazing, you know, because I had the luxury of being able to work with an editor, and they pointed out, like, you know, because when you write something lengthy, you write it in bits, right? You don't sit down and just write it out in one fell swoop. You all know this. And they pointed out that I had changed my voice.
Mm.
I didn't know I changed my voice. I was shocked that they realized. And I was shocked that they realized that I had a voice. Like there was
shocked you had a voice.
I was shocked I had a voice. Oh. Right? You know, because I'm not thinking I have any voice, for lack of a better phrase. You know what I mean when I say voice. But they saw the consistency and the inconsistency when I broke that pattern and were able to guide me. And I like what Edna pointed out, suggestions always work the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some people that are really tough skinned. Like Liz is pretty tough skinned. I'm not as tough skinned. I like Edna's approach with suggestions work really well with me. Yeah. Options and alternatives. And it's interesting how each one of you took a turn at editing when I originally wrote up the paragraph, which was kind of fun. And it got edited by each one of you. And each one of you had a little different style in how you edited. So it was kind of nice, but you were all pretty consistent.
Can I just say one more thing about the editing, since you were talking about peer editing and you need an editor? Something to consider for companies, because they like the bottom line. If a writer is busy being a peer editor, then they're not busy writing their own documentation or learning the product that they're documenting. That's another argument for that.
Well, let's face it too, if you're making your peer be your peer editor, that's kind of like, you know, it's a little tricky on the peer-to-peer relationship too. Right. Whereas an editor is expected to have a little different relationship with the writing team. Peer to peer is fantastic and you should absolutely do it, but you need to have an editor as well. Save your company, hire an editor.
There we go.
I love that. That's a bumper sticker.
Yeah, save your company. I was going to say, technical editing seg needs that.
I mean, even if you are independent, like large writing teams, absolutely you need to have at least one editor, if not more. But some of you are independents working for other companies where you'll cycle in and do the editing work for them, and in and out you go to do the editing. So even small companies, you need to have an editor. Might not be that the editor is there full time, but you need to tap into an editor.
And I think there was something in the chat about, you know, what if you don't have enough editors to not edit everything? And I didn't see if anybody responded to it, but what's the most important things? Have the editors work on the really important documents.
Right.
And always accuracy, but with a subject matter expert for that. You know, you have to make sure that the document is accurate. And then Ryan Kelly's right after that. Prioritize.
Mm-hmm.
You have to prioritize, make sure that we're looking at the really important documents.
Would you say to add a checklist or two while you're going through the process?
Everybody needs a checklist.
Absolutely. Everybody
should have their own conventions list. Because sometimes for each project.
Yeah. Oh, right.
You have every type of document. I have a checklist.
Yeah.
So you have multiple. So this is the common thing with all y'all, checklists. Okay.
And it depends I'm sorry, Edna, go ahead.
Oh, quickly, I was just gonna say, it depends on which style manual they're using too.
Right.
Right, but having spent time with Kelly, I'm with her and I'm now doing checklists for checklists on my checklist, you know?
Kelly's kind of a checklist queen. Kind of one of those known for.
Checklist specialist, that's what I say.
Well, any other parting words of advice for anyone who's wanting to break into the field of editing?
Just do it. Just find ways to edit people's stuff.
I would say join an organization. I just rejoined STC, and my time with it before was I met a lot of people, learned a lot of things. The conferences are great. The special interest groups are great. Yeah. There's opportunities to learn. So I would say join a professional organization. And there's ACES is also a good one to join.
ACES, right? Mm-hmm. So where I work originally, I wasn't the editor and they didn't have an official editor and kind of just do it. I asked if I could edit a writer's document when things were slow and they liked it. And then later on, I edited something else. So if you have that opportunity, if you work somewhere and you'd like to try editing, you know, it works sometimes. I mean, it could work if that's what you're interested in doing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else, you'll have stuff for your resume, perhaps.
And you'll learn new things. You may decide you don't like editing after all. You thought it was going to be cool and it wasn't, but you'll learn other things about other products or other, other parts of the company. I mean, I've, edited HR stuff and for the HR department, and then I learned new things there too. you just don't know. I mean, that wasn't my job, but I helped him out in a pinch. And
you bring up a really good point too. If you want to break into the field of editing, go find a nonprofit to help edit their documents.
Yes.
Yeah. I've find a nonprofit. I've helped with grants. That's a good place to.
What did you say?
Nonprofits. I've helped edit grants. Nonprofits.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
See what they get asked for. It's very much a tech writing kind of thing. They have to put them into systems and they, have to be very succinct. They have like word counts and things like, so it definitely fits into.
Good old words.
But even just editing a nonprofit's website with all the content that's on there, right? I mean, that's not as technical as professional writing, but it is, it's communicating and forming.
There's a lot of websites for companies that I've worked for. So
there's lots.
That wasn't my job, but I just did it. So
right, exactly. And that's a good way. And it's also, there you go, glowing portfolio. You have a before and after. Take a screenshot of their website before you edit. Edit it, let them implement it, and then take another screenshot. Ta-da, before and after. So there you go. Well, great. It's been lovely having you all here.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate your time and all of your well thought input and advice and guidance for everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for hosting.
Thank you for having me.